Welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Solentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Wichita State Track and Field continues its outdoor season on Saturday, Cessna Stadium, with the Wichita State Open. Starting at noon, it is the second of four home meets for the Shockers in 2021. We're going to talk with John Wise, who is Assistant Director of Track and Field and Cross Country for the Shockers. John, let's start with kind of the overall. This is a big year for how are you feeling? What's the mood? What's the vibe? Overall feel for outdoors. It seems like indoor track was kind of a tentative feeling out process. How's this going to go with COVID? You didn't have an American Athletic Conference championship. Is there a little more optimism that outdoor is going to look something like a normal outdoor season?
Yeah, we're much more confident. We feel like we're kind of starting to get into a normal. If there is normal, we're feeling much more normal than we've felt in a long time. The indoor season was tough. I think we managed it as good as we could have. We did some things in the fall to prepare our team. We did some scrimmages that we normally wouldn't do. And then the indoor season, when we heard the American Conference meet was canceled, fortunately Coach Rainbow got right on the horn and we got into a meet at Air Force. So we had a championship type meet, even though it wasn't an AAC meet. We competed against Oregon and Air Force and some schools from Arizona and so Pac-12 Mountain West type schools in a big meet that felt different than the regular season. So that was good. Wasn't as good as going to the conference meet, but I felt like we were able to do the best we could given our situation. But yeah, outdoor, we're excited. We've had a couple meets. We had one meet for our team 2 weeks ago at home. And then we had a few athletes at Oregon last week. So we feel like now we're really into our regular season this weekend as we get everybody competing again. And we've got four straight weeks of what we feel are really important meets of the heart of our regular season coming up. The kids, the athletes, you just feel like they're just kind of getting their legs back under them, in terms of competing and just feeling normal again. So that's a great feeling to have around practice and at the competitions.
How does Saturday's meet then fit into the kind of escalation to championship season with the competition level and everything?
So we're having these home meets, and the reason is because for a lot of reasons, we're limited in how many we can travel on the road this year. And so because of that, at home, we can compete at everybody. And in track, we've got 50 to 60 people on our roster. So we need our athletes to compete in an effort to make our conference championship team, compete in an effort to make these road meets that we have coming up that are going to be really important. And it's just kind of nice right now to be at home. And just with everything going on, just being at home, sleeping in our own beds, we have good meets coming up. We have good competition this weekend. We'll have good competition next weekend. So I think it's just opportunities for everyone to compete. And everyone has different goals. We have some kids that are trying to make that travel roster. We have some kids that are trying to get ready for the conference championship. We have some kids that have aspirations to make the NCAA or the Olympic trials. And so there's a lot of different goals throughout our team, and having home meets just gives us a lot more flexibility. So the next two meets, we're looking to really kind of see where we're at. We had the first home meet, was good, small meet. We had some good results, but the results really weren't as important as just getting going again. For some people, they haven't competed in a long time, especially outdoors. So we're excited to see if we're progressing from that meet and who is going to rise to the top of our team and be part of those rosters that we have moving forward.
Yes, there would be a group of outdoor athletes who would have last competed in 2019, mostly I think the throwers, javelin, things that aren't contested indoors. How did they kind of approach this?
Yeah, so you have like javelin throwers, but then you have athletes like a 400 hurdler that might be their main event, or like a steeplechaser, even the 4x1. Those are events that kids, some of them is their favorite event, their main event they haven't got a chance to do. But yeah, javelin throwers, it's really been tough because they were literally getting ready to start their season last year when it got canceled. They were, March, getting ready to have their first javelin competition. So they've just been, competing. We've been having we had these fall meets, so we kind of had an opportunity for them to do something. Coach Hessendorf made a funny comment. In the fall, we had throwers in our scrimmage meets doing running events because they just wanted to run. They just wanted to do something. It didn't matter. We did an event where they had to run to the top of the stadium. That was one of our events, and all the throwers did it because they just wanted to compete. you know, whether it was a javelin or just something. They had been a long time for him. So we were trying to do stuff to give him that feeling of competition again. But really nothing replaces it other than actually getting out there competing. And our javelin throwers, as an example, did really good at the first meet. And so we know that's going to be a strength of our team. And if you look at the AAC lists, we're, you know, a lot of the top athletes are in the javelin for sure. So yeah, it's tough. You know, I coached the 400 hurdles and the 4x1. Those are events that we're super excited about, and we're, you know, excited to just kind of get going. And we got to run them 2 weeks ago, and now we get to run them every week. So it's just excitement and trying to look forward more than look back right now, and just what do we need to work on and, you know, to reach our goals as we're getting through this outdoor season.
Before we dive fully into outdoor, let's go back quickly to the highlight, or one of the highlights of the indoor season. Joseph Holthusen, second team All-American, finished 15th in the 60-meter hurdles in the NCAA indoor meet, 8.31 seconds. He did not come here highly recruited out of Bishop Carroll. How has he developed into such a strong hurdler for you?
It's amazing, really, because he did more of recruiting of us than we did of him, and I think that story's kind of started to get out there a little bit, but he is just a guy who believes in himself like none other. He believed in himself when people maybe didn't believe in him, including me or Coach Rainbold, you know. It doesn't say not to say we didn't believe in him, but he had aspirations higher than we even had for him. And right away, early in his freshman year, we started figuring that out, and he would it would surprise us week in and week out. And now it's not surprising anymore, because the expectation is he's going to really do something great every week. So the indoor season, in all the ups and downs that we've had, was such a fun ride to watch him and watch him compete. To get to the indoor NCAA championship is unbelievably difficult. There's only 16 athletes from all around the world in Division I are competing for that. And he didn't have a great, you know, you mentioned that time. He'll probably be mad at you for saying what his time was, because he kind of had a technical issue and he didn't really get a chance to run through there very fast. But getting there was a goal that probably was checking off the list. And as we're driving away, he was like, hey, I've got to come here and compete well. I've got to get to the outdoor championship and compete better. So he's already, and that's kind of how a guy gets as good as he is. You have to not be satisfied with where you're at. You reach a goal, cross that one off, set a new goal. And that's what he's done his entire career. So it's been really fun to be part of watching him develop.
Is there something just to getting there the first time, and no matter how much you can try to prepare for it? My understanding is the atmosphere at those national meets are different, and it does sometimes take you a time to figure it out.
Very different. And so we want to get people, even if they can, you know, get to something like the USA Championships or the Olympic Trials. Those are other meets that are different too. Even if they're maybe not ready to make an Olympic team or to make the World Championships, getting to a meet like that is very beneficial for these other kind of meets. The indoor championship was especially strange this year, because you can only be in there in and out when you're competing. So we literally were in the facility for about 2 hours the entire time. We couldn't practice. You know, we've competed there before, so Joseph was familiar with it, but, you know, very strange. But it was a great experience for him, and knowing that he belonged there. You know, he knew he could have competed better. He could have a chance to make the final if he ran better, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So it just gives you usually more motivation for a guy like that to come back and get back to work.
The differences, it seems like, are always described to me. Number one, you don't have your teammates, so that's a much different feel for the athlete. And number two, you know, regular season meets are always described to me as kind of collegial and a little bit chummy. You know, there's some chatting going on around the starting line or wherever you're competing. National meet mood is a lot more competitive. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, the team thing is certainly true. It's different, especially for us, because the team is such a big part of what we do. And so we like to have our kids travel there and support and have some sort of a support system, because that's just what you're used to having. But yeah, I think track, you know, there's certainly that competitive nature, but it's a little different than maybe a football team or baseball teams against each other. In track, you know, I think you go and compete well. There's certainly some team aspirations for a couple teams there, but because there's so many individuals, I think everybody is a little more congenial in a track championship than maybe an NCAA basketball tournament. If everybody, you know, you want your competitors to do well, but it's super competitive. It's unbelievably competitive. And NCAA track and field at the Division I level is one of the highest level meets in the world. So it's To be there is an achievement, but yeah, you do have to learn how to compete at that level. It's a little bit different. The conference meet is different than a regular season meet. So those experience, so indoor, we didn't have that opportunity for freshmen. So this outdoor season for the freshmen will be a little bit different when they get to that meet. That's why we went to Air Force, to try to give them some kind of championship environment. And hopefully that gives us an advantage this May, because most of the teams we're going to compete against at the conference outdoor didn't have that opportunity.
So back to the outdoors. On the men's side, the highest-ranked shocker nationally is hammer thrower Michael Bryan. He grabbed the school record with a throw of 224 feet, 10 inches. He ranks number 7 nationally. Tell us a little bit about Michael. Why is he off to such a strong start?
So his marks are probably surprising for anybody that's not around the track and field office, because we can literally see him out the window throwing every single day for the past 2 years. And when we weren't able to have track meets, Michael's out there throwing the hammer. And indoor, he was starting to get going. He, you know, the 35-pound weight is kind of the indoor equivalent to the outdoor hammer. And Michael is certainly more suited to throw the lighter hammer than the heavier weight indoor. And he broke our school record in the indoor weight. And when that was happening, Coach Hetzendorf, our throws coach, was like, hey, he's going to be better in the hammer. Like, I think he's going to be even better. And so you're like, really? He's going to be better than the school record? You know, and the first meet out of the gate, school record. Second meet out of the gate, school record, wins the meet at Oregon and ranked top 10 in the nation. So, and when you talk to Michael, he's like, I'm going to throw farther. Like, this is definitely not where he's feeling like he's peaked. So he was a junior college recruit from Hutch Junior College, was not a high-level recruit. And in the throws, you get guys that are just – hardworking guys, guys that learn the event. It takes a while. They're patient. They get stronger. Coach Hetzendorf is awesome as a coach. And those guys develop. And he just kind of needs some time. And so last year, not competing, maybe that helped him a little bit, because he just had time to really practice. And I know he was ready to compete last year, but just having more time to practice. He just puts in the time. Like, he's throwing during practice, but he's throwing in the morning when I drive up for work in the morning, and then when I leave, he's still out here doing something, whether he's in the weight room. I mean, he comes to our office and hangs out all day at the office. He just loves track and loves throwing the hammer and is a great guy. And I'm hoping that these early season results are just an indication that he's just on another level, and he's going to be one of the top guys in the country moving forward.
So you've worked with John Hetzendorf for a long time. When he says something like that, have you not learned not to doubt him?
No, I believe him. I was teammates with him too. So, yeah, all of our coaches kind of, you know, you kind of know some things. I say the same thing about some people I coach. And so it's, yeah, Coach Hetzendorf's a little bit of a wizard with some of the throwing events. So, yeah, when he says something, you better believe it.
On the women's side, Rebecca Topham, 7th nationally in the 3,000-meter steeplechase. With a time of 10 minutes, 4.38 seconds, you've got Nicole McMillan. She is number 35 at 10:32:45. Tell us about those two.
So it'll be so much fun to watch the steeplechase this year for us, because obviously everybody knows about Rebecca, first-team All-American, coming back for her season that she lost last year. She's been chomping at the bit. Just, if you know Rebecca, she's 100%, you know, track and field and the steeplechase. And seeing her 10:04, I believe she ran at Oregon, early season run for her, you know, approaching her lifetime best is awesome. She's got big goals. I imagine there's likely to see her running throughout the summer, you know, and hopefully in the Olympic trials and Eugene back there again. So she got a little preview of the facility in Eugene. The NCAA championships are there as well. And then, you know, hopefully on into a professional career. I know that's something that she wants to do. So we're so lucky and just fortunate just to have her for one more season. So if you like track and field and you like the shockers, you should come out and watch Rebecca run, because, you know, there might not be too many opportunities to watch a special athlete like her. Nicole is a special situation. She's a graduate student that would have ended last year. She's from Canada at a Division II school, and she had this one outdoor season remaining and decided to come to Wichita State to finish her eligibility. And now that, you know, I think having Rebecca here was a big part of that. Coach Hunter is you know, a great coach. And so when we had the opportunity to have an athlete like Nicole just for only an outdoor season, that was a question. Do we want to have just a one-season person? And we're like, yeah, let's do it. You know, and it turns out that we didn't have an indoor championship, so it's not like we would have had our indoor anyways. So it's worked out that it's just an extra shot in the arm for our team as we are, you know, at the conference outdoor meet. Those points are so valuable, and having an athlete like Nicole in there. And I think her early season mark was decent. I think she's going to get a lot better just seeing her practice and listening to Coach Hunter. So I think she'll close in on what Rebecca ran, and hopefully both of them are at the national meet. You know, you never know, but certainly the top of the conference.
So the steeplechase will kick off the evening portion of Saturday's meet, 7:30 with the steeplechase. So if you want to get out here and watch them, that would be the time to show up at Cessna Stadium.
So they will not be running the steeple this weekend, but they will be running on Saturday night. So they will be, I believe, Rebecca's running the 1500, which will be kind of right after that steeplechase, and Nicole will be right after that in the 5K. So you'll see all of our runners running, except for Wendy Koski. She will take the weekend off because she ran the 10K at Oregon last week.
So you can watch them run. You just can't watch them splash splash through the water hazard.
Exactly. There will be plenty of steeplechasing and some shockers in there, though.
You mentioned Rebecca coming back, and Nicole also, I guess. Both of them they're part of the group of seven seniors who came back with only outdoor eligibility. That group, how's that changed the dynamic of this team?
It's a shot in the arm, like I mentioned, kind of like Rebecca, but the entire group, Zach Penrod, Corey Martins, I've got a couple in my group, and so it's not that you forget about them, but when you're going through the indoor season, you're not relying on them, you realize how important they were, and when they come back out, it's just an added bonus, and we need it. Our the women's conference championship is very even from top to bottom. Seven, eight teams could win that meet. And having an extra 3, 4, or 5 points from somebody who came back for this extra season is going to be super important. And then on the men's side, we think we have a terrific men's team all over the place. But obviously, Houston is going to be a factor. And we think Cincinnati is going to be really good, too. And so we need every point that we can get. And then, you know, guys like Zach Penrod and Corey Martins and that crew are going to just hopefully add dozens of points and make the difference from our team, you know, second, which was the last time we competed, a close second to putting us over the hump and winning our first men's AAC title. We've won the women. We want to keep winning those. And we're the defending outdoor champions on the women, you know, from 2 years ago. And our men are hungry to – they still remember that, the ones that were here. So they're hungry to come back. And that's one of the reasons they came back, was to try to win that title.
And you still have athletes who competed in the Missouri Valley Conference. It's a dwindling group, of course, but
yes.
Your track and field is one of those sports that is still hanging on to a few Valley people.
We do, and in fact, because now all these athletes are on a 6-year clock, there's some that still could be on our team next year that were in the Valley. And yeah, there's stories. They're like grandfather, grandmother out there telling stories to the young kids about the Missouri Valley Championships.
Right.
But yeah, fond memories.
Going to study hall with Cleo Littleton and Dave Stallworth. They've just been here forever. No 2020 outdoor championship in the American. Nothing indoor this year. Is it difficult to evaluate the strength of the rest of the teams in the conference?
Very difficult. We're just now trying to figure it out. Like we were looking at it this week, and there's people that you're like, oh, that's a kind of like Rebecca. That's somebody that's still, they're coming back for that outdoor season. And then there's some that you maybe thought were coming back that aren't back, or maybe they haven't competed yet. We don't know, you know? And so it's very difficult. I think, you know, the next 2 weeks it'll start to crystallize a little bit. I think we'll start seeing what everybody has. Like we have people that haven't really competed in their main event yet. So it's very difficult. We just know what we got, and we know we have a well-rounded men's team that we can score almost everywhere, and we know on the women we have some major athletes that can score points. And the women's meet, you don't have to score as many points because it's so balanced. 100 points might win the meet. The men's meet might have scored 200 points. It's just two totally different teams that we have and that we're building to try to win this meet. So we think we're going to be competitive and on both sides, but it'll be fun, and hopefully as we start crystallizing the focus that we're coming out on top as we start going towards the conference meet.
It seemed like even before the pandemic, because of the geographic spread of the American, you didn't run into other American teams a whole lot. Is that even less now because of teams are maybe traveling less?
A little. Like, you know, Tulsa's coming this weekend, so we've seen them more because we've hosted a lot of meets and they needed to have local meets. Instead of them traveling farther, we've seen Tulsa more. that's the only one. You know, I think Kirk and cross country had Cincinnati come out for the cross country meet because we were hosting and they wanted to get a preview. Temple came out, but yeah, we don't see them very often. So the conference meet is really one of the first times that we'll see them. And I think that'll probably be the way it goes into the future. We, you know, go to a Texas Relays here and there. You might see some schools from Texas, but not really much head to head. You just don't big giant meets like that. You don't really get a feel for your opponent until the conference meet. So it's fun that way. I mean, it's more random. It's more unpredictable. You know, just, you just don't know head to head what you got. And we're starting to figure that out. The Valley, we kind of knew, and we knew, you know, heading in, you could almost predict it. It was, you know, but now it's very unpredictable, especially on the women when there's so many teams that are very close.
Give us a newcomer to watch who's made a good impression that's kind of starting their Shocker career.
I'd say, you know, Nicole, obviously she's a newcomer, although that's a unique newcomer. I've got a couple of guys that are a lot of fun to coach. Jaleel Montgomery, who's a Wichita guy, Wichita West High School. He's a sprinter hurdler. And then we have a guy named Joachim Junaroux, who's from Canada. And they're, you know, two really good sprinters. They're guys that I think can score as freshmen in this really difficult league. And that's really tough. You know, they've already run well. They're both in our all-time top 10 list indoor and in a couple of events. And so they're going to be fun to watch throughout their career. And developing into a 4x1 team that I think is going to be one to watch here in the next couple of years. We've got some guys on our team that, you know, upperclassmen adding with them. So those guys have been fun to watch. But I know, you know, around the rest of the team, I think on the women's side, you know, one of the things that is difficult is that because of COVID and the pandemic, it changed recruiting to the point where we didn't have a lot of scholarship money. So the recruiting classes were not that big last year, and they won't be that big this year because we have athletes that we're trying to factor in. And so it's a long story, too much to get into the weeds, but we weren't able to recruit because we had so many people coming back. We have Rebecca coming back. We have Zach coming back. So that scholarship money had to come from somewhere. And so do we want to recruit somebody? Or do you want to keep Zach Penrod, who's a 4-minute miler? So we were fortunate to get some signees, but this is not as young of a team as we've had in the past with some of our newcomers. So, and next year will be the same way. We're going to sign some athletes we already have, but it'll be another year before we kind of normalize with some of that recruiting. So more of a veteran team. Most of the people that are going to be out there competing are people that either were, you know, on our team last year, or obviously have been on our team, but maybe didn't get a chance to compete last year. Like Courtney Hubert is a javelin thrower. She's not a newcomer, but it was her first competition, and she threw a 10th best javelin throw in school history at our first track meet, but she just hasn't been able to throw since she's been here. So that's a kind of a newcomer, but yeah, I'd say Nicole probably highlights on the women's side. Just she's a newcomer, fifth-year senior newcomer.
you're stretching you're stretching the spirit of the word newcomer, but
we've got a bunch of young girls that are trying to figure it out, and I think there's going to be there's a solid nucleus of newcomers. Nobody's really stood out too much besides like a Nicole right now.
You are the athletic department's chief movie aficionado. It's also been affected by the pandemic greatly. When's the last time you were in a movie theater?
It's been a long time. I have gone to the drive-in, the Starlight Drive-In. You know, drive-ins struggle in this country, but the pandemic gave them an opportunity to actually, you know, have events. And so I went to several movies at the drive-in. Indoor movie, it's probably been more than a year. I haven't gone since the pandemic started, so that's over a year. I probably went sometime in February last year. But yeah, I went to the drive-in half a dozen times, saw some classic old horror movies like, you know, Jaws and Friday the 13th and stuff like that. So I remember going to the drive-in as a little kid, fond memories with our family. So it was nice to go back and get a chair out and, you know, listen and kind of just be part of, you know, takes you back in time a little bit, especially when the movies are the movies that would have been playing when I was a kid.
Right. Do you still hook the big metal speaker up to your window? Does it still work that way?
No, it's everything on the radio now. Ah. So you just, they have the, like a light there, and they don't hook the speakers up anymore. So you just tune it in to whatever channel, whatever screen, they have the channel there, and And it sounds a lot better.
I think I do remember that now. I was thinking I had not been to a drive-in in many years, but I do remember doing the radio thing. What do you miss about indoor movies?
Two things. One, I do enjoy when it's a exciting movie and there's people there and going with your friends and just having that, you know, that's a unique feeling. You can't really get that in your house because the screen's way bigger and the sound, and it's just it's an event. It's kind of an event, you know? And, but there, the other part is that I go see a lot of strange movies that are maybe not as crowded as normal. And I've had many a time where I was the only person in the theater or two other people in the theater. I'm watching some documentary about World War I or something. And having an entire theater to yourself, to me, is one of the best movie going experiences that you could have. It's kind of like being at home. You can do anything. You can change your seats. You can talk. You can be on your phone, whatever, and not disturb anybody else, you know. So but I do miss, I'm part of a movie group in Wichita. Wichita has a significant movie going, you know, audience. It's more than most places. If you're not from Wichita, just know that the Wichita people go to the movies more than most places. And so I've been part of movie groups, so they have special showings in the movie theaters and the classic old horror movies or something like that. So I enjoy that, and I hope we can get that going again.
I'm a little surprised you didn't do the private theater rental and have like a John Wise film festival.
That would be great, but you're probably not aware of how much track coaches make, so that would require a little bit of down payment I might not have.
I want to go see The Courier. I saw a movie back in February, so I have been back inside a theater just once. I want to go see The Courier with Benedict Cumberbatch. Is there a movie that is going to lure you back?
Well, I don't have any of the streaming things. So I don't have Netflix. I don't have anything. I've got a giant DVD collection of 1,000 movies. So so I didn't get to see Coming to America when it came out. I was a big Eddie Murphy fan. I would love to see him Coming to America. But, you know, they've been holding off a lot of releases of big movies. So there's a couple that I've seen, you know. I'm probably not going to see. I don't know. Maybe Space Jam. I remember seeing that when I was younger. But I just haven't seen previews of movies that are coming out to theaters that I've been too excited about. And it's changing now because so many things are just going straight to on-demand and HBO Max and Amazon Prime and Netflix and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure what this is going to come out at the end of what kind of movies are actually going to be in the theater. I hope that they still are because that's, once again, I'm one of the rare people that don't have some of those things. So I'll be still wanting to go see them in the theater. But yeah, I have a little bit out of the loop with what movies are coming out. So you might have to help me with that.
Do you have a philosophical objection to streaming services?
You know, I've had some, but my DVD collection, I feel, is better than any streaming service collection. And so I can literally watch a movie I haven't seen in 10 years, you know, and so it's just paying the money for it. If I pay for something, I want to use it, you know. Going to a movie and spending $10, I'm paying for that experience. You know, I can spend $10 a month, but the experience isn't the same. If that makes sense. So, yeah. So I've had Netflix, I've had things like that, and eventually I just don't use it enough because I'm either busy, I'm obviously getting into traveling a lot, and, you know, obviously the track and field season keeps you pretty busy. So I'll live sports. I'm a Cincinnati Reds fan, so in the evenings I'm trying to watch some or listen to some or follow along with some sports, you know.
And watching baseball is not an easy thing to do either.
Not easy. Not is.
That's a separate podcast where we can complain about the Bally Sports Networks or whatever they're called. Will indoor movies survive? Will they change dramatically? What do you think there?
I don't know. It feels like it's inevitable that it won't. Maybe drive-ins will still be something that's a unique outgoing experience that they can continue to do, but I don't think so. I just think the younger generation gets older, it's gonna, you know, there's gonna be less of that, you know, and it's just gonna be way easier to watch it on your phone or watch it on your computer, watch it on your own TV at home. It's gonna become more accessible. It's going that way, so I feel like inevitably it's gonna dwindle. Maybe it's still there. It's just not, instead of having, you know, five movie theaters in Wichita or whatever there is. There might be one, you know, or something like that that's has new movies here and there and plays old classic movies like Back to the Future and stuff like that. Those seem to still have an audience when they put them out there. Whenever I go to an old movie, there's a lot of people that show up because just older crowd went to the movies. So I don't know. We'll see. I hope not, but it just feels like that's the way it's heading.
I think they will. I think the feeling of the event, it is a special thing. I think people will start to flock back.
I hope so.
This summer. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'll happen initially. Just long term, I don't know how that'll go in the long term.
You just can't replace paying $5 for a bucket of Dr. Pepper and some Junior Mints and popcorn. You just can't. It's just not the same at home.
No, so. It's not.
Take us through your travel series, Travel with a Wise Guy, your video series. Tell us about that.
So when last summer, when we had our season canceled and we couldn't recruit either, and we still can't recruit, we still are in a dead period, I didn't have anything to do. And so I've been traveling for years and international traveling, and I couldn't do international traveling last year. And so just talking with some friends, I always take videos and pictures and stuff, but I never put them together. And somebody was like, hey, you should do a YouTube channel and just put your stuff out there because I think a lot of people would like it. And I'm like, nobody's going to want to watch that, you know? And I was like, okay, I'll do it. I'll do one trip. And so I went on a road trip into the Rockies and I went to Glacier National Park and just went on a road trip for 10 days in the summer. And put it together, didn't have any idea what I was doing, and put it out there, and people seemed to like it, and I got a lot of encouragement. And it's like getting likes on your tweet. You're like, oh, okay, well, I guess that's feels good. Maybe I'll do that again. And then I did another video, and it was even more popular, and then people start subscribing to your channel, and then I'm like, okay, well, I guess I need to do this because I'm enjoying it, first of all, and it kind of makes me do something. It kind of makes me... Every Thursday, I'm going to put a video out, and so I need to sit down and have some discipline with what in my life, you know, and I have to plan some trips more. And so it's been awesome for me, and I've learned some editing, and I've learned look at it from an artistic, you know, perspective, and now it's just one thing that I look forward to doing. And if I have an off weekend, I'm probably going to go on a little bit of a road trip, and I've gotten into really exploring small towns and more unique things, especially Kansas, Oklahoma. Abandoned places, things like that. And I got a video that I just put out today about the smallest towns in Kansas that I went 2 days road trip. There's a map as I go through. You can do the road trip if you wanted to and explore these towns that are 20 people and less, you know, that are unique. I grew up in a small town, so that kind of stuff appeals to me. So I don't know as I move forward. I don't know what it'll be as I move forward, but people seem to like it. And I appreciate those people that are watching it and commenting, and so I guess I'll continue doing it. And every once in a while, when I don't have anything to do, I'll do a slushy review because it's kind of a joke. I can introduce the internet, a friend of mine to the internet, to my friends, and we sarcastically rate slushies. And so I'm excited to get you on there at some point and figure out what slushy you want to review in Wichita.
I'm always willing. Your next project is Joyland. That's a big winner with Wichita people. We can't get enough Joyland.
I haven't done anything about Wichita yet, so I've got a couple thoughts, and I thought that would be a good one. So I explored the abandoned area of Joyland, and so hopefully next week that one will come out. But the Kansas one I'm really proud of, the one I put out this week, so hopefully people are interested. They can tune into that. It's just on YouTube, Travel with a Wise Guy, and you can subscribe or whatever if you want. If not, don't worry about it.
What is the smallest town in Kansas?
It's Waldron, Kansas, which is on the Oklahoma border. It's 10 people. And actually, it used to be Freeport, Kansas, but they unincorporated in 2017. So in the 2010 census, Freeport is still the smallest town. But if you technically are, it's not a town anymore. So, but in the video, I actually went to both of them. So you can actually see what a town of 10 and a town of 4 both look like.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.